news right now.
You've tuned in to Motorcycle Radio. Please note, turning off this podcast may damage your radio. And here's your host, Ian Richardson.
Oh, hello.
Oh, hi.
How are you?
Great.
Oh, great. Well, that's great to see. I didn't realize you were popping in, but I'm glad you have.
Ah, you never know where I pop up.
No, exactly. So, welcome to the Motorcycle Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Ian Richardson, and you're tuned into what is probably the best motorcycling podcast in the world. And today, I'm absolutely delighted to welcome Kiwi Joe, who's on the go and joining us all the way from Christchurch, New Zealand. So, hi, Joe. How are you?
Hi. I'm great. And a beautiful, sunny New Zealand.
Oh, thanks for that. Yeah.
Well, bring a bit of sunshine to your life.
4C and cloudy, it says. As you will find out, because I believe you're coming to this neck of the woods very soon.
Yeah, I'll be popping back over to you in a couple of weeks to carry on my journey. Yeah.
So tell us about why you're here. What brings you to the Motorcycle Radio Podcast?
I just want to encourage people, share parts of my story of my motorbike life and, what I'm sort of currently doing,
Fantastic.
So I thought I'd come and share it with you.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I'm pleased you have. I appreciate it. So you're obviously doing some adventure on a motorcycle, which brings you to us. Would you like to sort of tell us a little bit about what brought you into the motorcycling world? What started it all off?
Well, I could take it right back. Back in my day, you're 15 and you can just go and get your license, scratch a few things. And I actually bet the cop back to the station and he was like, well, if you bet me back, you must be great. So here it is, not like today. I used to use my father's motorbike as a kid and go down to the local dairy and get, lollies supply for the week. And, spitting moths, riding in the dark and things like that. Just always loved it. But I actually didn't get into motorbiking really until my marriage split up and I decided I needed a hobby, get out in the world, meet new people.
Right.
So, I actually brought the wrong motorbike to begin with. I bought a Suzuki Bandit and I overheard my friend wrong and I should have bought the SV Suzuki.
Yeah.
But I brought the Bandit. But I did 44,000 Ks in 2 years on it. Definitely, it was my best. I joke to people, it's the best boyfriend I'm ever going to have. It was my boyfriend at the time. And some of my mates used to say, where's your bike, Joe? And I go, I've left it around the corner with the keys in it because I really didn't like it as a bike. But, I'd bought it, so I thought I'd better use it.
Great bike. But the Bandit.
Hey?
The Bandit.
Yeah, the 650. Yeah, the 650 Bandit.
Yeah, they've sold millions of them and they're like unkillable.
Absolutely unkillable, but I think maybe it just wasn't the look I wanted. I actually liked the Triumph Street Triple at the time, but I had to wait 3 months to get one and I decided I wasn't going to wait 3 months. I wanted to do this. So, and then from there, I was privileged enough to have a go on a mate's Pingali on the track one day and absolutely fell in love with that. I bought a 1050 Spray Triple in between my processes and I did actually buy the 675 Street Triple at one point, but I so remember the day on the Pingali. I came in just smile on my face. My mate said, I'll take a photo. And it was like, well, give me a jacket because that matches the bike, for my photo. So I actually said to him, if you're ever going to sell it, give me a ring. Because I knew I was ready to step up in a level of riding.
Yeah.
This was probably about 4 or 5 years into riding. Anyway, he messaged me one day and he said he was going to sell it. And I said, no, I'm actually going to buy an adventure bike. I want to ride around the world. I want to ride the world and I feel I need to ride adventure. So, you know, you're not surprised when you come across gravel and stuff. And so his next message to me was, oh, we're going to South Africa next year, a group of us. And I thought, oh, without me, that can't happen. So I said, any chance I can come? And he said, yeah, there's a space. So it was like, well, what do I buy? So he advised me to buy the Tiger 800 XC.
Yeah.
So it got dropped off on my driveway. I was like, whoa, what have I done? Have I really, you know, pushed above my weight type thing here? It's like, yeah, it scared me. So I actually took it out for a ride on my own that evening. First gravel corner, nearly fell off. It was stalled on me. It ran backwards. I managed to actually get it going. Well, I was so scared of the thing. So I to this day, I thank my friends because they took me under their wing and taught me how to ride it. And yes, I got my bike. We rode the whole of the South Island in New Zealand, and I fell off many, many times. My river crossings, I could have sold tickets for. They were brilliant. Trying to sit down, is that the best way? Try standing up. One river crossing, I stood up, and I hit a rock, and it threw me back, so full throttle through the river, which, hey, speed's your friend sometimes, through the river, but I was squealing out of laughter and terror straight up the bank and into the bushes. You know, just brilliant. So from that, I then, I got my bike in the container, and we rode, there was six bikes, and we rode from Cape Town to Johannesburg.
Wow.
And that absolutely seeded it for me. I just knew that I wanted to ride the world, really, ride as many countries as I could.
It's funny that you mentioned that, I mean, so many people, me included, you know, I rode as a 16, well, as a 14-year-old, but 16-year-old legally. My dad was a biker as well. And, you know, it was just a thing. And once you've got that magic, that thrill, that feeling of two wheels, that's it, you're done. I certainly was. But you know, I had a lifetime of on and off bikes, both falling off and buying them and selling them and having a car and all that. And then, you know, you get a little bit older and sometimes you go back to it. And it's interesting that you said that when you ended up divorced, that was the thing, you wanted a hobby. But it's astonishing, really, that, you know, you would think to yourself, not only am I going to get a bike, but I'm going to go and get an adventure bike and I'm going to ride around the world and do all these amazing things. I mean, it's I don't know. You've got some balls to do that, haven't you?
Here's a joke. I was told many times my balls were too big for my shorts, so they put them on my chest. But actually, I realised when I first went out that night on the Tiger and I bulged up that first corner majorly, I just didn't know what I was doing. I actually had a fear for gravel, and I think that had come from my father's bike that I used to ride, the little Suzuki 125, a little tiny wheels on the country roads, freshly gravelled, and it would just suck me to one side to the next, and I had no idea what I was doing. So I really did have a fear for gravel, yeah. But, you know, like, man, I take the record quite often, the amount of times I fall off. You know, it would be up four more times a day in South Africa. You know, I joke to my friends, oh, it's got altitude sickness, it's tired, you know, as it just fell over. Looking back now, I think it was because I was riding too slow, I was too cautious. But, you know, like, I don't want to advertise Chris Birch, but, you know, our Chris Birch, New Zealand, I've done two of his courses and absolutely brilliant. You know, I highly recommend.
Yeah, no, don't worry about advertising. That's amazing. You know, anybody who, wherever they are in the world, there's people like Chris doing their thing.
Yes.
And it's amazing that if people just decide just to spend a little bit of money and so a little bit of time, the difference it can make to your riding, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I did another one in in Salt Lake City in Utah as well. And a father and son, absolutely fantastic.
That's
Really,
brilliant.
really, really great. Yeah. But yeah, I actually borrowed my father's motorbike and left home early. And sadly, where I took it to, it got hot wired, and my father died still rubbing that bike.
Oh.
R rubbing my nose in the bike that I'd actually ruined. Yeah, he
Yeah.
kept it.
I didn't think you had any of that type of stuff in New Zealand. I thought everybody were really nice.
Oh, nice. I'm nice.
Not you.
I
The
just,
hot wired you
I'm
got.
just.
Not you.
Oh right. Oh yeah. No. Well, I lost the key, and my flatmates
Oh, God.
trying to hot
Oh,
wire it.
I see.
Yeah. So no, I, n I never found the key, and Dad never had a spare one, I suppose, and or never fixed it. But he did. He did actually. My father's passed away now, but he did actually present it to the boyfriends I took home to try and find one that was going to fix it for him. But yeah, it ended up going rusty in the paddock.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what year did you do this South Africa trip?
I think it was 2017 or 18.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the following year, the same group, the same friends who I still have contact with, we did the Across Egypt challenge on scooters.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. 35 of us. It was a very regimented. We were all numbered on our helmets, and I'm a bit of a non-compliant person, so I found it really hard to be, stuck. So actually, on the last day, we were going through these roadworks, and everyone was going all different directions, and I was like, "Here's my breakaway. Here's my spot." So I full throttle past a whole lot of people out the front, and then the next minute, the guide was beside me, pointing at me, and made me stop
Oh
on the
yeah,
side
you've got to have a
of
guide, haven't
the
you?
road. We were police escorted the whole trip with fully balaclava AK-47 guys that were escorting us, because there was 35 of us from all around the world. So we could have been a real target to, kidnap or whatever if they wanted to,
Yeah.
because it affect a lot of countries. But yeah, absolutely fantastic experience.
I bet. Did they supply the scooters then, or did you have to buy it and sell it, or what happened?
No, they supplied them.
Right.
Yeah.
What were they,
And
different types, or were they all, what type of scooter?
through the thing, you could actually pick different things, different bikes, but it was a cross Egypt trip. I think our scooters were like, I don't know, 150 cc's or something. I can't remember. But when I did fill the forms out, I ticked 600 cc,
Right.
and the guy that was running it got back, and he said, "Do you realize all your New Zealand bunch are on the 250 or whatever scooter, or 150 scooter?" So there was actually a group of like Honda Hornets and other bikes,
I see.
but we wanted to do it as the scooter challenge, because that's what it originally was. And is, yeah, they only do it every second year, so yeah.
See.
But yeah, so but like back then, I was like, I probably didn't have the well, I don't have the knowledge I have now, but I was probably wary of organizing anything myself.
Yeah.
I then brought a bike in the UK, a 800 Tiger road version, over eBay. Being New Zealander, I couldn't insure it in the UK, so a very kind friend bought it for me. I paid him, he brought it, and I was the rider on it.
Yeah.
So I started thinking, well, I'll start, doing trips from the UK. So I went over and did a Magellan, is that how you say it? Magellan tour.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, Magellan. And we did the Dalmatian coast and Bosnia and all through there. And I think I'm still talked about on that trip, because I don't think you're meant to get lost. And on the last day, I hadn't worked out my GPS properly, and the guy didn't have time to download the files. So I just had the piece of paper with the coordinates on. So
Right.
every day I put the coordinates in, and I thought, oh well, this is a learner for me. Anyway, I lost the piece of paper, didn't I?
Oh,
I
no.
And I stopped to get fuel. I got spat off the bunch to go and get fuel. And we were always given, where we could have morning tea, where we had lunch, and the end thing. Now, I knew the Eurotunnel was the end result.
Yeah.
So after throwing all my bags out at the garage, trying to find my piece of paper, I thought, what am I going to do? So I went to a McDonald's, got on the Wi-Fi, and I Googled the Eurotunnel, and the coordinates came up. I thought, yep, I'm handling this really well. The coffee was terrible. I threw it away, but I thought I had to buy a coffee to use their internet.
Yeah.
So, and then anyway, I scanned down and I just saw Eurotunnel and it was about 600 kilometers. So I pushed the button and thought, right, I'm under control. And I started thinking, I saw this morning. I might be going the wrong way. No, trust my TomTom, trust the coordinates. There must be only one Eurotunnel. Well, do you know there's a Eurotunnel in Austria?
Well, I know there's lots of tunnels under the mountains, but I didn't know one was called the Eurotunnel. Oh, my God. That's because we refer to it as the Channel Tunnel, don't we?
Yeah. So when I realised I was going the wrong way, I have a belief that I'm meant, wherever I am, I'm meant to be. Yeah. So I just thought, that's okay. I've got a few days up my sleeve. I don't have to go back on the Eurotunnel. My trip's not over. It's not my last day. So I get this message from the group. We're all at the Eurotunnel, Joe. You're the only one not here. Where are you? So I messaged back and I said, oh, I'm in Austria. And he goes, you can't be. I go, I'll ring you tonight. I am. So, yeah, I think I get used of an example of what not to do on the tour now.
Mm. Hold a picture up. Don't do what this woman did.
Yeah, this. Hey? I was actually blonde then, so I used to joke about blonde.
Disguise, is that why you've dyed your hair?
Well, that carry on a bit further, but when I was in Mexico just recently riding, I was just over them frying my hair to continue getting it coloured, so I just thought, I'm going to go dark. I'm going to blend with the locals.
I'm all right wherever I go.
Yeah.
You don't have everywhere. Wow. That sounds amazing. I mean, lots of people who have ridden that, the Balkans say how amazing it is. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely beautiful. And as my first adventure like that, you know, like not with my Nelson friends. It's just, I used to think my helmet's a viewfinder, and I must have a really strong neck because I'm just right rubbernecking and just the smells of,
Well, that's what it's about, isn't it?
And you always go back for a double sniff, no matter how bad the smell is, don't you?
Oh, wow.
A dead animal? Well, what's that? Yeah.
Sometimes it is, of course.
No, so skunks.
Sorry.
Skunks are the worst. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, we're lucky we don't have them, but they do in lots of places.
Yeah. America, South America. Yeah.
Yeah. So what happened after the Balkan tour? That was on your 800 that you bought in the UK, was it?
Yeah, I think that was 2019, I think. You know what it's like with dates and years. Yeah. Then I came back to New Zealand, carried on working. Then I had the next year planned where I had Isle of Man booked and I was going to do Scotland, Ireland, Norway and stuff.
Right.
And we all know what happened, COVID. Yeah, I broke my ankle in between this trail riding.
Break anything worse than your ankle?
Trail riding on an 800XC was not a good idea. I was meant to be on a smaller bike, but anyway, thought I'll be fine. Flipped over and broke my ankle. But anyway, so I think there was a year where I didn't ride, and then COVID hit. So that sort of squashed that. And then when the world opened up again, I thought, right, here goes, I'm going to go and do Ironman and what I'd planned. And I had met a fellow rider here in New Zealand, and I said, oh, do you want to join me, you know, as a friend? And she was like, oh, yep, okay, you know. So then by the end of that weekend, it had gone to let's buy bikes in Alaska and ride back to New Zealand. And my friends in New Zealand that I'd ridden in South Africa would, we'd always talked about it. And I just said, I'm in, no matter what, I'm in, you know, to do something like that. So to meet somebody else that was in a position to do it, oh, yeah, let's do it. So I sold the 800 Tiger in the UK, brought a 900 Rally Pro in Alaska over the phone, flew in, picked it up, and, yeah, we didn't quite get to Prudhoe Bay. We got as far as Coldfoot. We were actually the first adventure bikes out there that season, and we were probably a week too early. That was all it was, but we about turned. Then we headed through Alaska into Canada, didn't get up to the Arctic Circle in Canada because the late snow melt. There again, we were a couple of weeks too early. Then, yeah, we zigzagged across the States, heading down. And looking at it now, we actually, I'd say we both felt the world was really big and we had to track quite fast. And I know a lot of people you talk to, that's one of the things they all say, you know, you've got to slow down. You really got to slow yourself down.
Yeah.
So anyway, we went down the Baja, and which was absolutely amazing. But there again, we only stayed one night. Even going through Yellowstone National Park, I didn't even take a photo of my bike with buffaloes. We were just riding.
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy. Got to slow down. So anyway, we hit mainland Mexico and realized that I actually mapping and riding styles were a bit different.
Okay.
So we went our separate ways. I tracked across into Guatemala. And it was actually interesting, my reaction at the first border crossing on my own. I actually had the cameras going, so I got a lot of it on there. The guys were really quite funny. But it was like, oh, no, I'm the only one here. I was the only, there was no queue. I am the only one here. It was such a dodgy-looking border crossing in the middle of a market. Anyway, it's on my camera. The money exchanger, he did me. He did me for money. I learned a lesson. He worked out how much I had. Then he, on his calculator, then he puts it to the back of his stack. And as soon as he did that, I went, I think I've just lost some money. So he flicked forward. Then he went back and flicked my money. And, of course, there was less flicks than there was originally. So I just said, you know, I always say I believe in karma, you know. Anyway, he gave me my money. And but they were brilliant. And then, yeah, it was pretty dodgy roads to ride off. Yeah. But I loved it. It's the slight adrenaline of the craziness that you get riding. Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, the fact that we call it adventure, if it's not got a little bit of adrenaline, a little bit of fear, a little bit of trepidation, a bit of being unsure, it's not an adventure, is it? It's just a ride.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And all that stuff is a part of that adventure, not just what you see and smell, but the whole thing.
Absolutely. Oh, I was just going to say, you know, like, you know, throwing itchy boots is just absolutely brilliant for everyone out there. And I've just watched some of hers because on my next trip, doing as much as I can in Turkey, Georgia, and then I'm actually.
I've just been watching her today going through Turkey into Iraq.
So, her attitude and her everything. And I've learned. Just be nice to people and laugh with them. You know, I have a pet monkey, Mikey. He sits on the back of my bike and I wave my arms. I act like some crazy lady. And I think they just push you on. They just go, off you go, lady. You know,
like, yeah, loco, loco.
You know, you can't stand, you know. I stood my ground with one cop in, I think it was Guatemala or Honduras there somewhere. They checked my paperwork, and then because that was okay, the guy walked over to his superior guy who was ticketing someone, and then he come back and he drew this wee picture like I came out of the roundabout pulling lane too quick.
Oh, yeah, dear.
And I was like, yeah, no, I was up to speed. There was no other cars around. So he made me get off the bike, and that's when he actually made me turn my camera. He realised my cameras were going. And I went, no. And I, like, pointed to my eyes and pointed to these other cars doing it. And I went, no, no. So I got back on my bike, started it up. I was just shaking my head, no, you know. And he closed his book. I just wrote off. It's just like, no.
They only want people that are easy to do. If you're going to be, I mean, it's a call, isn't it? It's like, will they go too far? And you've got to not let them. You don't want to put yourself in a risky situation. But 99% of the time, they want people who's going to go, oh, okay, I didn't realize, on purpose, give in so they can take another $20 off you. But if you just
Oh, absolutely.
stand up and say, no, I'm not doing it, and use
My
it.
friend and I, had another situation. When we entered into Mexico, we went through the border and realized, oh, we've missed the booth type thing. So we circled round, and then the guard, the border officials moved some cones for us to park. And we thought, oh, that's nice of you. Thank you, thank you. And then we went in and did our stuff. And then as we left, this guy on a scooter pulled us over. My friend was in front, and he was talking to her, and he said he wanted $2,000. I wished I had my camera going. I was still in a fluster because I'd lost a piece of paper at the border, and I had to rebuy it. And the guy accused me of accusing him of losing it, and so I was still a bit of a fluster. But anyway, he asked my friend, $2,000 off each of you. Otherwise, I'll make trouble for you in this country. Take you back to the station. So we're like, well, we haven't got that on us. But, hello, two women on Alaskan plated bikes. Did he really think we had $2,000 each on us? So we went back to the station with him, and he parked us over by some dogs barking in an old cage. And he pulls us over like this. And he goes, you pay, I make trouble. So it's like, well, what have you got on you? I've got $20 left. You got 40. I owe you 10. Let's give him that money and see what he does. So we give it to him, and he's going, go, quick, go like this. And he couldn't get us out the car park quick enough. We thought, is he even a cop? But he had guns and tasers and everything. Anyway, as we were riding off, the sirens went off again. And I was thinking, oh no, somebody else is going to have a go at us before we leave this little town. But no, they chased him.
Oh my gosh.
And I reckon I visualized he got a good smacking because is that all you got?
Yeah.
And looking back, when those border people moved those cones for us, because he said you've parked the wrong way up a wrong one-way street. And it was a one-way street, so our bikes were facing the wrong way when he moved those cones. So it was a setup.
Yeah, of course.
So
And
the $60 wasn't going to share between everyone, was
No,
it?
exactly. And if only we know when we're there, it's our ignorance and our, concern, our newness to it all that makes us vulnerable to that type of thing.
Absolutely.
Because if
Like
you were living
now,
there,
yeah.
you'd be able to say, well, you'd just say, yeah, that's a 10 peso fine parking the wrong way. You know it is. Give me the ticket and I'll pay it in the next 28 days. You know
No.
what it's going to be. But they know you don't know that, so they try it on.
And I've learned to always make sure the battery and the GoPro, and I have a remote on my handlebars because I got another guy really good, a good one. Not to make borders sound scary, but this guy entering a border, I think that was somewhere through Guatemala as well. Anyway, entering this border, and there was a cone in the middle of the road. It was a guy with a fluorescent vest on and chair. He stood up. He asked me for my paperwork. I only gave him my photocopies. I don't hand over the originals unless they really ask for them. So I gave him the photocopies. He goes, "Right, go up here, go up there, and I'll meet you over there." As I rode off, I looked in my mirror, and yep, he removed the cone. He packed up his chair, and I thought, "I've just been dumb."
Straight to the nearest bar.
So I wonder how much. No, I hadn't paid him anything. I wonder
Oh, I see.
how much he's going to ask for.
Yeah.
So after I'd been to the first place, which was good, he told me where to go. He then met me up further, and I asked him, and he said, "Oh, 25 euros or whatever it was. It's 25 euros, I think it was." And I thought, "Oh, that's fine. I've bought it. Come this far with him. He speaks okay English. I'll go with it." But then the computers crashed, and it was about 4 hours, 5 hours by the time we got out of there. Anyway, at my bike, I gave him the money, and then he asked for another. He asked for double because my friend watched your bike, And I said, no, the lady in the coffee cart watched my bike. I give her my money. So he really started to push in on me, and I do stand my ground. So anyway, I pushed the remote. I put my helmet on, I pushed the remote, and it just came to me. I told him I was Viva Live transmission. Like that to him, you know, you're being watched.
Yeah.
And he just instantly went, thank you, have a safe trip. I rode off laughing because I don't do Viva Live transmission. Oh. And the GoPro, it was flat. So he didn't even know. It wasn't even going.
No, but it put the fear of God into him. He won't want his family to know what he's doing.
Oh, absolutely. And that's where, you know, there again, itchy boots. You know, she got that guy doing that to her in what, South Africa
or
something.
Africa, yes.
Yeah. And I think it is so wrong. But you know, like if he'd said to me at the beginning, look, for this I help you, this I help you, not a problem. But he sort of trapped me from the beginning. I actually got him on GoPro, just you know, before it got flat as I came through the second bit, I actually got him. And I actually sent a picture to my friend who's also still traveling. Beware of this guy. So she knew what he looked like.
You know, I think some of it that I've experienced is that we have a different understanding of being straightforward and honest in different countries. You know, similar things have happened to me in different scenarios. And
yes.
I've said to them, don't you understand if you just was, none of this would happen. If you'd have just said, like you, I'm going to charge you €25.
I'm a fixer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To help translate for you. I know those people, and if I do it, we'll get it through quicker. Is that okay? Yeah,
yeah.
Fine. Or no, I'll take my chances. But when they try and blag you, that's what I hate.
Yeah.
I hate this blagging. But in some cultures, they're not purposely blagging. That's just how it is. They don't have that same, you know, way in which we are. So certainly I can only speak for my own nationality and people I know. We will say, this is what it is. And we expect people to say it clearly. This is what.
Absolutely. And your bike's not safe. So, you know, would you like someone to watch it? But as I say, I would rather give the lady in the coffee cart where my bike was right outside there.
Yeah, who needs it more.
Than these guys. But but overall, look, I've been in queues at borders and I've looked and people have got, I can't remember what country it was, I think it was Nigeria or somewhere like that, and they had US dollars in their hand and I went, what have you got that for? And someone said, oh, you've got to give the lady 13 US dollars. And she just threw it in a shoebox, right, not to get anyone to trouble.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I haven't got any on me. And I get tapped on the shoulder and someone gave me 5 and the next person gave me 3.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, can I give you other money? No, you know. And that's happened to me twice where I've been helped out. And I've also done it, you know, because I believe what goes around comes round. So, you know, paying it forward. So I've also done it with people.
And, you know, I've experienced a similar situation. Somebody offered to help me with something. I'll be as vague as I can. In a and I didn't have, I couldn't, legally I didn't have what I needed. And so he took me off to one side and said, right, come with me. Took me in a taxi where we bought some photocopy paper and 2 sets of black pens, and then went back and he gave it to them and said, my friend from Inglaterra, he gives you as a gift. And they were like, oh, really? And he's like, oh, thank you so much. I said, oh, you're welcome. And they were like, thank you. And then he whispered to them, okay, thank you. And you know, corruption, but it's a fact of life in some places. And
absolutely.
It makes it impossible not to participate in some ways, because a bit like you with that guy with the chair in the middle of the road, if you'd have said, no, I don't need your help, not only would it be more difficult without him fixing it, but he would know them and they'll be in on it. And so he'll potentially go and tell him, make it as difficult as possible.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Because he was definitely in on the guy behind the counter and he probably got his cart and they definitely fast-tracked it. But, I'm always attracted to people that I hear speaking English at borders. And
Yeah, of
there
course.
was this young couple, and because the computers crashed and we were all sort of sitting there for hours. And I said to them, oh, how long you been here? And really, I wasn't actually fast tracked, I don't think. Yeah. So I learned from that. I've handled myself at every other border I've crossed. To begin with, I was writing a piece of card up with their language, what I wanted, passport, temporary import, this, and I'd point to it because just to help myself through the process. But I will not leave another place. I went to the guy, stamped and off you go, lady. And I don't leave the counter until I know that I've got my two originals, which I've squiggled on the back, a wee cross on the back of. And one of them was missing. And I was like, where's this? Where's this? And he's shaking his head, telling me to go away. And I was like trying to climb through the window. And he'd thrown it into his rubbish tin.
Oh, no.
But I could have so easily just thought, yep, I've got all my paperwork. I'll just walk away now. I never leave the counter until I'm convinced I've got everything I need. Yeah.
5,000 Ks later that you found.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And another border I was at, they wanted to scan my bags and my bike's out in the car park, actually behind a bus. I could have just ridden off. I wished I had. Anyway, I drag it all in, sweating like a trooper, drag it in through about four doors up this cattle stocks, the sheep them and things, and then some drawers. I put them on the scanner. He doesn't even look at the scanner. So I'm standing at the end, sweating, going, piece of paper, thinking, will I get stopped up the road to show my bags were scanned? And he goes, no, go, go, like that to me. And I was like, for all my effort, I got nothing, not even a piece of paper.
Oh, dear.
But yeah, you have to play the game. You have to play the game.
You do, exactly. And I remember, in a situation going through a border, having I bought a compressor. Tire compressor, and the normal punt tires, and the compressor, for whatever reason, looked a little bit like an engine. It had the fins, cooling fins on it, and it looked quite a bit. It was only a cheap Amazon thing, but it looked okay. And I got everything searched, and they said, my son has a bicycle, and I said, good, yeah. I said, these are very good. Can I have? I said, yeah, Amazon. You can go Amazon. He says, oh.
You can have off Amazon.
Yeah, I did. I said, yeah, Amazon. You can go Amazon. Deliver. 2 days later, he says, put his hands in his pockets. But I have no. And I said, a shame, really. And went to take it off him, and he tightened his grip. And he said, maybe I could give my son this as a gift from English. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know what? This is going to cause me some trouble if I don't.
Yeah,
so I
absolutely.
Thought, you know what? I can order another one from Amazon next Airbnb.
Yeah,
I just
that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to. That guy was the only guy I paid, the one that tried to get more off me. I haven't paid anyone else. And that time the guy, did me for a few dollars. And it wouldn't have worked out much in my dollars. I learned from that. Never let go of your money until, you agree from the other side.
Yeah,
and the fixes, the money fixes and that, they all have the same amount. It's no use going to another one.
Oh, no. No.
It's all the same. It's all the same. And it's convenient. It's fine.
It's a way of life, unfortunately.
It's a way of life.
You just have to accept. A bit like we said earlier, it's part of the adventure. This is how it is.
I never hit a border, though. I always will stay the night, and I'll go to the border, about 9 in the morning. I keep myself calm. A friend, there's a wee saying that people like of mine, I was in Nelson. One of my friends was helping me spray a roof one day, and I was paint going everywhere. I couldn't get this spray, the actual motor part. It was jammed, and there was paint going everywhere. She turned around, and she said to me, just calm your farm. So whenever I'm at a border and I start getting a bit, I just tell myself to calm my farm and just take it easy. Just it's not worth getting all flustered.
No.
Yeah.
No. What were you doing on a roof? What were you painting a roof for?
I've done up houses for a few years. So I buy a house and live in it and do it up. And,
okay.
I do all what I can, yeah. I should have been a man, really. but yeah, I'm
Oh,
okay with it.
I
I'm
wouldn't
okay.
recommend it. It's not all it's knocked up to be.
Oh, I don't know. So no, I really enjoy it. So yeah, I was an artist, and I still will go back to my paintings. I used to sell paintings, do craft and stuff, but started to realize that I was actually capable of, yeah, doing small building and tiling, and yeah, every house I've done, I've learned more skills, bought more tools. Yeah, I frighten most men. I've got more man tools than most men have. So yeah.
Brilliant. Wow. So
So yeah.
what made you the person that would, at a pivotal point in her life when actually it's quite a shit time, let's be honest, a divorce. I've been through a divorce. It's regardless of the cause, regardless of the reason, it's not a good time. And it's even if we celebrate it at the time, it still brings a point of grieving, a point of change, all that stuff. What is it in you that give you the strength to decide to do the stuff we've been talking about for the last almost an hour now, would you believe? What is it that inside you that makes you do that? And some people, male or female, go and buy a bungalow and watch Netflix and go to the shopping centre once a month.
I don't know. I was always born, I think, with an adventurous soul. So, and I'm thankful for that. So I really wanted to make the most of it. And, when you do go through a divorce, like you realize that you only actually have a few friends left. A lot of them go the other way, or they're family friends from your husband's, or relatives from your husband. So I had to like think, well, I want to meet m new people. Yeah, I had my license, and I just thought, oh, why not? Yeah. But I was instantly hooked when I was out riding the first time. I read a book on how to ride a motorbike, how to work the apexes out. Like, my favorite motorbike is one I have here in New Zealand. It's the Triumph Speed Triple RS 1200, and I absolutely adore that bike. So, but in the beginning, I actually read a book on how to work out your cornering, the camber of the roads and
Counter
everything.
steering and all that.
Counter steering and everything. And I took myself out for a ride on my own, to work it out. I didn't want anyone watching me. And sometimes I wouldn't even want to come home. I would be heading home and go, no, I'm not ready. So I would do the block again, and I'm talking a block of a couple of hills, probably 3 hours. And
Wow.
I'd go, no, I'm not ready to go home yet, because the husband had left, the kids, I only had, I think, one child left at home at the time. And then when my cat died, I thought, right, I'm not replacing that. So I actually became a completely free person.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So and the people I've met, the countries, I'm up to 45, 46 countries, I think, I've ridden through. I even popped into Ukraine for a coffee the other day when I was in Poland, just to test my anxiety levels out at the border. I don't think they knew what to do with me on my video. She's standing there twiddling her thumbs, looking at me. Took me 20 minutes to get in, but it did take me 2.5 hours to get back out.
Right.
I think they were looking for something in my bag. I'm not too sure, but they were great. Yeah, it was fine. But I just thought, why not? Yeah, I thought I would see more displaced people. I only went a couple of days in, and the insurance to get in on added to my green card was just in from the border. There was these ladies. They were having a big banquet of food and a coffee. So, and it cost me 10 New Zealand dollars and a phone call waiting for a fax to come back from Kiev, and they gave me coffee and cake.
Oh, wow. That's
To
nice.
get my insurance, to yeah.
Yeah, that's nice. When you bought the bike, I know you said that you had a friend who bought the bike and put you as a named rider in the UK, because I know you have to be have an address in the UK to get insurance, don't you? That's why what makes it difficult. But you bought yours over the phone in Alaska. Is it easier to do that in the States than it is in the UK?
Yeah, absolutely. I've just the Alaskan bike is still in the UK,
Yeah.
and I've actually just re-registered it for 2 more years over the phone through Alaska. See, for my 2026 adventures, which aren't finalized yet, but that bike's life has not ended with me. And I've actually freighted over a 390 KTM from New Zealand. It's on its way. It got held up in Singapore. It's on a ship, but it's on its way because I want to ride a smaller bike on my own. I found the 900 a bit big. I found I was riding past the roads I really want to go down, the worry of not being able to pick her up, even though I carried a hoist thing. So I've sent the 390 KTM to see how it'll be interesting to see how she copes.
Well, I'm sure it'll be great because I know that if I were you, thinking back about our conversation over the last hour or so, you broke your ankle because you were trying an 800 off road and it's a bit big for that type of work. So I'm thinking, if I'm you, I'm thinking, not doing that again.
No,
So
the 390 will be great
it
because
will.
I'm going to go through, it'll be interesting to see how it copes on the from Kyrgyzstan to Laos is the 30-day ride China tour because you're not allowed to ride across China on your own. So
Yes.
I'm doing that, and there's some pretty big altitudes there. So it'll be interesting to see how the KTM copes. But I do carry a tow rope, a tow thing, so I'll be fine. I'll be fine. I'll find a friend.
Course you will. Yeah, of course you will.
But insurance throughout the world, a lot of it is insurance at the border. It's probably not worth the paper it's written on, but they get you to
Materially.
have it. I had a. Have we got time for another wee story?
Yeah, of course.
Right. I had a car in Mexico. At the, yeah, it was funny. My thing kept my Garmin kept going the wrong way, and I knew I was meant to be going that way. It kept arguing with me. It took me a long way. But there again, thinking, no, I'm meant to be here. I'm meant to not have left town yet. Anyway, car in front of me went straight through. I went straight through, bang, straight into a car. My GoPro goes flying. I'm standing in the middle of the street like an absolute celebrity. Everyone's taking photos. I quite like one of them, but I never got one. All taking photos of me. And the car driver's screaming at me, you pay, you pay. And I was swearing a wee bit, thinking, oh, I just don't need this right now. Anyway, this car stopped beside me and the guy unwound his window and he said, do you need help? He spoke English. I could have climbed in the car with him.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Yes.
we yes, please, please. We pushed the bike aside, all bent steering. I had no front brakes. I cracked my main screen. Anyway, the car driver pulls over and I called him the interpreter. He starts talking to him. And then I pushed, was settling myself to then go over and have a look at the damage. And he comes back and he said, no damage, no pay, safe travels. And I was like, how did that happen? Like, it was a hoo of a bang. My tire had hit his tire dead on the spot.
God, you were lucky there.
I know,
Oh.
because I really don't think I had insurance at all. I think that I don't even remember if I had a piece of paper, but it wouldn't have cost much, and it's just not worth it. I was thinking, here goes a couple of thousand dollars. Are they going to take me to the ATM machine? Anyway, I burst into tears and I hugged the car driver out of, sheer relief. And then the interpreter guy says to me, oh, are you okay? Do you need a drink? And I should have thought of tequila, but I went, have you got whiskey in your pocket? It's like, oh yeah, I could do with a wee drink right now, Anyway, then he also said to me, he said, would you like me to take you somewhere to get your bike fixed? And I'd actually booked 3 nights accommodation, which I don't normally book ahead of myself too much, but I wanted to do a tour into the Tikal National Park. And it was a good 6 hours, 600 Ks riding. And I went, no, I can handle bent steering. I've still got my back brakes. I'll be fine. Just mantra in your head, only back brakes, only back brakes. So
Don't go on any
bent
gravel.
steering, you get used to bent steering after a while, it
Yeah,
becomes
you
the
do, yeah.
norm. Yeah, you do. So off I rode. Anyway, when I got to where I was staying, and it's a place called Flores, in the middle of nowhere by a lake, And I said to the guy at the receptionist, you know, do you know a good mechanic? Hopefully speak a bit English. And yep, ordered, sorted the next morning, found a guy. He milled my front disc. He sorted my bike out. But oh, this is another funny. As I rode into their workshop the next morning, it was all gravel, big rocks and off camber. Of course, I put my feet down to support myself, don't I? Pull my front brakes in. Heading into their workshop, squealing, they all came sort of like running, and I managed to jam my bike between a some cans and a gate to stop myself.
Wait, I thought you were going to say between two cars.
So, no,
not again.
This was in their workshop. Anyway, absolutely brilliant. Couple of hundred New Zealand dollars, and they fixed my bike up. You know, just and that's what I say. There's beautiful people everywhere in the world. There really is. It's only the tiny 0.5% that cause you trouble.
Yeah, and that is something that comes from every podcast, every person I speak to, everybody I meet on the road, everybody that's a friend who rides. Almost everybody just wants to have a life like us. You know, have relationships, have a job, have leisure and pleasure and happiness and just live the life.
Yeah. Someone asked me one day, what's something you've, you know, stood out or you've learned? And I said, everyone's just trying to live their life the best they can, you know. But I did notice in Peru and Chile and all riding down that way, you'll be riding through the back block deserts and everyone's living these little tiny, you know, size 3 kids' shoebox, you know, concrete square with hardly anything. And sometimes I think, oh, it could be a rough night tonight. You know, I really hope where I plan to stay, I clicked the right button. It is where I thought it was going to be. And then you come across, suddenly in the middle of nowhere, you come across this big town and then go for a walk and there's shopping malls. Like,
where did they put it? With
everybody's normal world stuff. And you go, well, where does this fit in your house outside? It doesn't match.
Yeah, it is a contrast. That's the thing, isn't it? Whenever you go to, and you've travelled, 40-odd countries now, you'll have seen this.
46, I think it is,
Yeah. The contrast between the haves and the have-nots is there's no such thing as a third-world country anymore. You know, I don't like that term. But people say developing country. They're developing, but they're not developing in a linear sense like we'd think everybody's getting richer or everybody's getting better things.
It's
developing like this. You know, you'll find the haves and the have-nots, the people bathing the kids in the rain, in the gutter, 100 yards from a mansion with a, you know, a Rolls Royce outside and a driver with white gloves on. And it's like,
yeah.
Or the big malls, you walk in air-conditioned. I remember going to Thailand and then going into a mall. And it was in a similar type of area, you know. I thought, oof, this is going to be a bit rough. Cleaned everything up. Thought it's going to be. I want it's better be here when I come back. Walked in past a Rolex dealership, past a Porsche dealership, and then thought, I need the bathroom. Looking for toilets. Went in there. It was like, you know, everything was electric.
You found a good one.
No, because it's in a mall. I went in and it was like. You didn't even pay. I mean, here, anything half decent, you're paying your 50 or whatever, you know. But it was like it give you a blow dry. It did everything in the toilet, and I was like, wow, played music.
Wow.
I thought, what an incredible contrast. And to see that in South America, Central America, Asia, the Middle East, such massive contrast that we're not used to. So it is interesting that you know. I think we all see.
Can I go to the toilet?
Absolutely, of course you can.
We're going to cut this bit.
Yeah, well, I'll just pause. Yeah, no worries.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, great. Yeah, so it's so unusual, the differences between the haves and have-nots. And like you say, coming across a shopping mall in a place where you the least expect it and think, what? You know, who's buying from here? And not only that, go in and they're packed. Sometimes it's like heaving. Great.
It's like they have a two worlds. They have their traditional world outside, which I love to see. That's what I like to see.
Yeah.
But then they go into the mall, and is the mall the internet world? It's there, like everyone else around the world, you know? Like the malls look the same as our malls in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Quite a lot, often the same brands.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? You're right. It's funny that you said like the internet world. It's a good way of putting that because it's you'd only see that in that world if online if you didn't if it wasn't there, if that mall, that little microcosm, whatever they call it, of westernization is there. And you walk in and it's like McDonald's, KFC, Burger King, Pizza Hut, and it's like, oh wow. Zara. It's like really not.
Yeah, it's not right.
Yeah.
I remember when I was and I went with a couple of school teachers to Burma years ago. One of my first travel experiences, not on a bike though, and I actually taught art at the schools to the teachers, with an interpreter. I taught the teachers at night classes to then teach the kids how to paint. But I remember walking down the streets, and there'd be this hut with a flash four-wheel drive and a big TV, and the washing machine must have broken down because they just thrown it out the door. But and then next door's a massive big mansion, and you think, and they're watching that TV, so they know that the world is different from where they live,
Yeah.
you know, not just a made-up movie.
Yeah. Hey, interesting. You mentioned Burma or Myanmar, as they now refer to it. I've got a whole lot of family in Burma, would you believe? Yeah, and it's not from a sort of fling on a bike ride or anything. I don't think.
That didn't cross my mind.
No, but some people who know me might think that it's not. It's from years and years ago. My granddad, his brother went out to work on to manage a tea plantation in Burma in the sort of 1920s. Might even before that, might be 1912, something like that. I remember, my parents telling me all about it. And they ended up staying there and marrying a Burmese lady.
Beautiful
Having,
people, beautiful
yeah,
people.
oh yeah. And had children and now so and grandchildren. So I've got sort of second cousins and nephews
Wow.
all in that area that I've never really met, although we know of them. It's unusual, isn't it, that something like that happens and all of a sudden, got like another line of the family growing up.
I've got three children and eight grandbabies now. But one of my oldest daughters, she bought me the DNA test one Christmas because she said, "Oh, if you're going to travel, Mum, you know, you might want to know." But and I did it, and I found a cousin in Australia or something. But I didn't want to pay the monthly fee to wait for somebody else to do a DNA to find out I had a relation somewhere. So yeah, I didn't actually carry on with it. But
Well,
yeah.
interesting because I did exactly the same about maybe 5 or 6 years ago. I paid like 40 quid for Ancestry DNA or whatever it
Yes, that's the one. Yeah.
was. Yeah. And I got that back and then I bought my wife one. I bought my oldest son one. And then my youngest son, I bought my dad one who's now passed away, but we all did them.
Yeah.
And
You found out you had different relatives.
Well, you got them all. I mean, what it did, I don't know if you, I didn't pay. I just paid for the DNA test and it sends you the thing, the
Yes.
website that you log on. But it even goes to, of course, from the UK, thousands, hundreds of thousands of people went to Australia and New Zealand.
That's how my parents ended up out here. They were British.
Yeah,
Yeah.
right. So,
They ended up on the pound boat.
yeah, that's right. So I first of all, it showed me the names of them as you're going down the there's a I forgot the name of it, but there's a similar site you can do. You can pay for it, but you can do the free version, which obviously I'm a Yorkshire, I did. And it tells you who they are and when they were born, and your little family tree starts appearing. And then when you click
But
on, sorry, go on.
I thought that if you didn't keep paying, the tree won't grow, keep growing. because no. you have to wait for more people to come in with their DNA for the tree
Send
to
you the
grow.
link. I'll send you the link to it. It's interesting.
Oh, okay.
It's I trace mine back, and I haven't paid a penny. I trace mine back about 12 generations.
Wow.
I mean, and I know I can't swear that from six generations or so it's fact, but there's no reason to think it isn't, because I can see my parents, my grandparents, my great-grandparents, who sort of died around the time I was born, 1963 I was born. So, you know, you could see that even though I didn't know them, said they died sort of September 64 or something, so they'll have been alive. And then the one before it, when we did my dad, I said to my dad, do you remember your great-grandma? Yeah, blah, blah, blah. They were born in so-and-so. And of course, they were on there. So it starts in five or six generations. I know it to be true. And then it goes back. And of course, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger because you've got two sets.
We're all related, though. If you go back far enough.
We all are, absolutely, yeah. We're all related. You are going to find that very interesting, I'm sure. It's great to look at.
And
what it does is it shows you a map of the world, and it shows you from where I am or where our family was at the time, the little migratory routes and who it was. So I've got loads going New Zealand, New Zealand, New Zealand, New Zealand,
Australia,
US, Canada, US, you know, Burma, all over. It shows you. It's amazing, really.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'll send you that link if you like.
Okay. Yeah. But, I will probably be able to look far enough to find the link into what I did do, but then never followed it through any further. So yeah,
it's worth looking at.
Fun. Might find some other adventurous biker.
You never know who turns out to be a long lost.
That's right. Yeah, better check before I meet the man of my life on the side of the road somewhere.
That's it. Yeah, yeah. Can I just ask you to spit in this tube?
It wouldn't go down very well, would it?
Oh no, probably not. No. So, we were just talking about, was it Guatemala and that Central America area you were talking about, the mall? When was that, when you were in that part, neck of the woods, coming down from Alaska and through the states and into the Central and South America?
That's not last year, the year before. So from Alaska, I've ended up doing my, from Alaska to, it was 9 months, from Alaska to, I flew my bike from Panama into Bogota, then a road around South America, and then from Buenos Aires to Heathrow. And then I was meant to pick the bike up and store it at my mate's place while I come back to New Zealand for Christmas and stuff. And it missed me. It was got stuck in Spain. So the freighting company I used so kindly stored it for 6 months in the corner of their shed. And so I flew back, picked it up. And then, so leg two, I did. So that was in leg one. So that was 2023.
Right.
Yeah. 2023. That'd be about right. Yeah. Something like that. So then, I've got that right. So then last year I did what I'd originally planned, the Isle of Man, which was just 10 days of just, oh my God, on steroids. Absolutely loved it. Became a bit of a celebrity. They saw my bike with Alaskan plates on it, and got even stopped in the street for photographs. Are you the lady from New Zealand? And it was just so cool to, I'm not after fame or any certificate or record for riding across the world. I just love meeting and inspiring people, really do. So then, as I say, this leg, I fly back to the UK on 20th of February, and my KDM, I'll go and pick it up from Southampton. Then I'm going to ferry down to Spain, do Spain, Italy, Greece. Then I'm going to go up into the bottom half of Turkey. Then it's a bit of a trek I'm doing. I question myself a wee bit. Then I'm going to Austria, Erzberg Rodeo for 4 days.
Right.
You heard of
it? You're actually going there on purpose this time and not just as a result of a dodgy sat-nav decision.
No, I'm going there again. I actually was nearly going to find the Uritano and just send, you know, Magellan photo.
Yeah, I hate you.
Yeah. It does exist. See, yeah. I wasn't lying. And then from there, I'm actually going to back up to Denmark, and I've booked the ferry to Iceland for 14 days to ride.
Wow.
So, as I say, it's a bit of a crazy up, then back down. After Iceland, I was going to go to the ABR festival again. I did that. But to do 2 weeks in Iceland, it doesn't work out with the ferries. I mean with the ABR festival.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I won't be there this year. So then I'm going to go back across Romania, chopper Turkey, Georgia, Russia, Kazakhstan. I'd like to get into Mongolia. I've got the visa to go across Russia again to get in. But time frame, I just don't want to ride fast across Kazakhstan just to go, whoo, I'm in Mongolia. I think I might do that when I do Japan and stuff. So, yeah.
Wow.
On another trip.
The stuff you've planned, Joe.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Mad.
Yeah. I'm not itchy boots, but I do have an itch.
Well,
definitely. Yeah. An itch to travel.
And
absolutely.
You're scratching it, aren't you?
Yeah, and I'm scratching it good time.
Definitely.
Yeah. And I also love being, I do a bit of photography, so I love just photographing people and just taking my time, doing all the, you know, tourist things that I come across, have a city fix, scare myself at a theme park if I fancy a city fix or something. Yeah.
One of the biggest things that people tell me if I ask them for regrets about travel, especially bike travel, is that they did it too fast.
Yes. Yeah.
Lots of people say sometimes it's necessary because you've got to meet a time scale for a ferry or for a crossing.
Yeah.
But under normal circumstances, the biggest regret people say to me is, one, I did it too fast and I literally passed within a few Ks of a world-class, you know, bit of scenery or a castle.
Or history. Yeah.
And I didn't even look at it. Or I ended it when I could have continued. I didn't have to stop, but sort of made an excuse in my mind to stop. And now I'm back here talking about it, and actually, I'm
wish
not.
I was there. Yeah,
could be back there, and I should have been.
Yeah,
so too.
Definitely. And I think that's where 2026 plans are going to kick in a little bit. To go places that I missed. But yeah, it's you do have to slow yourself down, and you, it's like mapping. I don't map more than 4 hours, and I only map the night before, really, once I've looked at what's in the areas. I don't like to commit too far ahead. The Kyrgyzstan, you know, Kyrgyzstan to Laos, ride China, and my Erzberg rodeo and the Iceland, that's enough booked. That's enough plans to go round. I don't want to really,
I think that there's a fine line between over planning and under planning, isn't there? Some people say, I mean, there's a different, certainly from me, you know, I speak to lots of people doing similar things, obviously.
Absolutely.
Two extremes are people that say, oh, whatever, I'm not planning anything. I'll just turn up at a border, blag my way through, and some do. Believe me, some people get through without any car days, without any visas in advance. They block their way through. So people go across a mountain rather than go over a pass through a, and they're like, pretty extreme and puts you at risk. But people, and then other people on the other extreme give themselves, I've got to be at this crossing on this day.
Too much planning. That's where solo riding is a part. Like, I never thought I'd be a solo rider because, I love a good conversation. And you sort of think, will I be too lonely? You know, will I be standing on the street corner trying to find someone to talk to? You have the freedom to stop, start, do what you like. If you see a sign, I might go and have a look at that. You haven't got to correspond or, you know, upset someone because they've made a plan. And that's the beauty of solo. That's why most people riding around the world are doing it solo. Or they've got their partner on the back of the bike, so the one in what, the one with the bottle's the one in charge type thing. Yeah. So yeah. But yeah,
you're making me smile because when you said like waiting on the street corner to talk to someone, it's a bit like me that I like to talk to people. So I'd be like,
hi.
Yeah.
The same, the same. I'm like that. I just like, and I don't even care if they don't answer me back because what do they say? You've got 2,000 words a day you need to use up. So yeah. I don't, if they don't answer me back, that's fine. I've planned my trip so far, touch wood, with no carne de passage.
Wow. Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, it's only I've actually got to have one more conversation with the AA here in New Zealand because my KDM is New Zealand plated. When I contacted them, they wouldn't give it to me for Iran. I said, well, that's just a backup if something happens with Russia. But I'm choosing Russia instead to go up higher. But no, just temporary imports at the borders. But Malaysia, I may have problems, which I'm trying to follow through with that. So I may need one for that. But I found out the other day that I can actually get one at the Iran border. It might cost me a little bit more, but I can get a carne de passage, temporary one, to ride across Iran if I have to.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
if something happens with going up into the bottom of Russia, but they know I'm riding on a motorbike. The government gave me the invitation letter, so I can't see it will be a problem. So, and the other thing is too, like some people want to ride across the world and one big hit, break a world record, you know, like Libby and Ollie did just recently, the youngest couple to navigate the world. I actually saw them in Mexico.
Oh, really?
Just saw the bike.
Oh, I see.
I know who that is. I know. And then I took a photo of it when it was at the ABR festival. I like doing it in legs because when I go back, I've got a hunger to see the mountain, to see the moss, to see all the things.
Yeah.
That, you know, that like in Scotland, the castles, you do get to the point, oh, it's just another castle, you know.
Yeah.
But by doing it in legs, I start with a fresh eyes, fresh hunger. That's how I see it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And like you say, people do it all differently.
Oh, absolutely.
I love the idea of doing it. I was just mentioning to, I think I mentioned it to Dave. I did, yeah. Bike guy Dave, that for the same, I always advise people, you know, just don't keep waiting, do it. But, like many people, I'm great at giving advice and don't necessarily take my own advice. And for many years, I mean, I work for myself now, so I've got some opportunities. But when I worked as an employee, I couldn't just disappear for a year, you know. So I had to do it when I had stuff like that.
Yeah, a lot of times is that like. I talk to people and probably about second or third question in is how can you afford it? Are you sponsored? And I was like, well, no, I'm lucky enough to be able to afford it. I've set myself up. I, you know, rent a house out I live in. I've got, you know, other passive income. So it was a plan. It was definitely a plan to do it. But there, another one of my sayings is there's no roof rack on a hearse. So, yeah. So, you know, and you're only here once. And if that's what your itch is, do it. Just do it. And you don't need much stuff. Like I've limited myself right down on the KDM because it's smaller. I'm not carrying a tent set up, which I called my emergency accommodation, but I did use it a bit, but I didn't rely on it. I don't freedom camp. Being a woman, I take my hat off to the women that do freedom camp. I just don't think I would sleep. So I'm this trip back, I'm going to have a go at using some of the bunker bikers. And to meet more people and stuff. But then sometimes you just want to hide in your room. And I'm always locked, being a woman, I'm always in my room before dark, locked up. You know, in fact, the only time I did wander the streets was in Mexico when every corner had a black balaclava AK-47 man on the corner. And I actually felt safe because he was there.
Yeah.
Instead of feeling worried because, you know, because they weren't there. But no, normally I'm in bed pretty early and planning the next day.
I think that's very wise. Whether you're male or female, but especially if you're female in a place, you've got to take it serious. It's no good saying, it's okay. You are, just because I'm feeling it doesn't matter. The fact is, whether it should matter or not, it can. In certain places, it can make a difference, and you've got to be
Absolutely.
cognizant of that. And if you're not, you put yourself at risk. It's crazy not to, you know. So I applaud you doing that, and I think that the idea of planning ahead not too far, having secure accommodation. I know you're on about doing the bunker biker, and lots of people do. My son went in one in France. He loved it. Six of them, great. He actually six people in this thing. He said it was fantastic. But me, I like to have my own little room. So I have a shower, hot as I can, and then just chill in my own space. You know, black and white telly.
Airbnbs have been great. I was doing a lot of Airbnbs because I only like to go into the cities when I either need something or there's some real attraction. I like to stay in the back, meet the real people, I call it. But yeah, the Airbnbs are lovely. And as I say, I was in Norway and stuff. The cabins at the motor camps were only a little bit dearer than putting my tent up. So why would you put your tent up?
Really?
So on this next trip, I'm not going to carry the tent. I'll carry my sleeping bag, and I've got a bivy thing, which is only really thin type of, and so just in case I end up on the side of the road, I've got some form of shelter off the bike. Because yeah, there's a bit of emergency thing, but it takes up a bit of room. And you don't need much stuff. Like, I won't tell you how many pairs of underpants I'm down to, but you don't need a lot of stuff because you can always buy another t-shirt. You can always, there's things everywhere around the world. You don't have to cart it all from home, which is something I learned.
I'm a bit like you. I'm very, very fortunate that I planned my life a little bit, and I've got a pension, which is, you know, not an old age pension, not that you'd ever think that, but I've got a work pension, which gives me an income, whether I work or not, thank God. And I always say that having, you know, the benefit of that means that all you really need is your passport, your bike, and a debit card or a credit card.
Well, that can be scary sometimes though, when you put it in the machine and it spits it
Pressure
back out. You
it.
can't, find that button up in the corner that will translate it to English. So
Yes.
you go, oh, okay, I'll put it in one more time, and then it spits it out. You really need some money. I'll put it in one more time, knowing that it may eat it, and that. But it's such a beautiful sound when it actually does start printing your money. It's
That.
like,
Thank God.
I know. It's like, oh,
Yeah.
yeah. So just little things like that. But
I had that in the Philippines once. Went to a cash machine, put it in, it went and just ate it. And I was like, oh my God.
no.
I was like,
But you've got
no,
a couple of spares, though, eh?
absolutely. But
Absolutely.
the feeling was just the most horrific. I was like, oh. So it does happen. But yeah.
But going back to the Carne de Passage, if you Google that, it comes up with a huge amount of countries that you need it for. And I was looking through the list, and I said, well, I know Peru, Chile, da da da, all these things. No, I never needed it. So it's actually hard to find a actual map of the ones you need it for. But when I approached New Zealand, they were like, well, no, there's too many do not travel countries, we can't give it to you for. So yeah, as I say, it's only Malaysia I've got to do a little bit research on. Other than that, I'll be doing UK to Malaysia or somewhere down there. Carne free. New Zealand sadly is a carne country, but I'm from here. But Australia is the big one. So I'm just going to buy a bike in Australia when I do Australia and just take my time.
I mean, it sounds a bit extreme, but I've actually done that in the States. It's sometimes just easier and cheaper. You
Absolutely.
don't have to
There's
keep it
no
all your life.
prize for riding the same bike.
No,
It's
exactly.
No, and some people choose to, but I like to mix it up, and I sometimes think, oh, what will I buy in Australia? What world's the oyster? But something, I'm only 5'6", so I do have to lower bikes, and I put 20 mils on the bottom of my boots. So you got high heels walking around, but it does help.
Yeah,
does
good.
help with just not just just hopefully stopping that bike from falling over. Yeah.
You're an amazing inspiration, and I knew you would be.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah.
Honestly, just people.
Kiwi. Ask Kiwis. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I prefer to think it's the British bit that's made you what you are.
Oh, sorry.
Come on.
If I cross by, if I go into Iran, I'm not supposed to mention I'm British.
No, don't mention that bit.
No. I hope I have, and I hope, you know, inspire people. And if anyone wants any information, you know, but it's not scary out there. The borders aren't, you know, they're just a formality. And as Itchy Boots is showing, and it's brilliant she can keep her camera going through that, because I've been, you know, I had a guy in Costa Rica, that an army guy, and he told me I had to turn my camera off, and he wanted to search all my bags. And I was like, oh no, please just pick one bag. And I laughed internally because he picked the bag on top, and I was flicking out the undies and the bra and all this. And he was going, fine, fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It's funny how men were so like fickle, really, with stuff like that, aren't we? Like,
Yeah. So, no, it was funny. But, you know, like, because it's not easy to undo all your bags, you know, really. So I quite often say, please just pick one bag. Yeah.
Interesting.
But yeah, a few other, you know, little stories I've got, you know, like in I've ridden in Vietnam before, and that's pretty damn crazy. You undertake, you overtake. I loved it. It was quite an adrenaline rush. But Peru and Chile, I wrote on one of my posts, the bigger the vehicle, the bigger the bully. I threw myself off the road twice just to avoid hitting head on, and they didn't even look back to see if I was alive. One of them, I looked the bus driver in the eye, and I knew I wasn't going to fit, threw myself straight into the long grass, into this dirt. I was only doing about 60 or 70 Ks. Too scared to stand up. Mine's telling me, stand up, you know, you can ride this out better. I was too scared in case it slipped on the grass. Too scared to touch brake, too scared to change gears. I focused on this car rut where a car must have also done it, and I got myself back up onto the road. And there was a guy on a push bike, and he just went, oh, like that to me. And I just went, oh, like that. And I just rode off, you know, like nothing had happened. But the bus driver didn't even come and look, you know. And there's a photo of my bike half sliding down the steep bank. And that was a truck coming straight at me. And I looked at the verge, and I thought, I'm not going to fit. The best I can do is to keep the front wheel up and just let the back slide. And I did. I just let the back slide, and I stepped off. And within minutes, there was people there to help me pull it out. And I only, you know, loosened a mirror, which I've replaced with those collapsible ones.
Oh, yeah.
But they just don't care. They absolutely. And I was told that it's the bigger the vehicle, is at fault in any accident. So, and oh, this was Vietnam. If you're on a motorbike in Vietnam, so the rule is you're only responsible for the accident if you hit a push bike and a pedestrian.
Oh, really?
But the trucks, we got told that when we hired bikes, but the trucks, they are liable for the accident for everything that's smaller than them, and that pulls their head in. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting, because recently, I think within the last couple of years, I couldn't give you the date, they updated the highway code in the UK. And that two things that came from that stand out in my mind. One is a similar thing saying that priorities for safety go downwards.
Yep.
So
down.
Pedestrians the most vulnerable, push bikes the next vulnerable, but motorcycles the next vulnerable, then car, then van, then truck.
So if you're you are responsible. So on a motorbike, it's only, you know, the push bike and the pedestrian. We also got told in Vietnam on a piece of paper, if you hit a chicken, do not stop. If you hit an animal, virtually do not stop. If you hit a human, do not stop as a tourist, because they still push the kid to get money first. Sad, eh? We saw two dead bodies when we were over there riding. Yeah, one was stuck under a truck, and the other, they'd actually just put a carpet over I've been on a scooter. It's crazy. But yeah, I must say I did enjoy it. I did enjoy the riding. Yeah.
Yeah. God. I mean, I've seen lots of dead bodies in the Philippines hit by on bikes, hit by trucks and stuff.
Yeah.
And people that have been like shot by the police, they just
Mm.
they go after. I mean, under Duterte, where he had their president had this dealing with drug dealers, but it also meant dealing with drug users. Just go out,
Yeah.
kill them rather than arrest them, encourage
Yeah.
them to run or something so you can kill them, and they just leave them side of the road.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's like life's cheap, which is sad.
Very sad.
We won't end on that sad note.
No, definitely not. You mentioned that you'd got when I introduced you with your Joe on the go. So we mentioned about your Instagram. Kiwi Joe
I
on the
yeah
go.
key as Kiwi Joe underscore on the go.
Right. Do you have any other
And
social media that you'd like to?
sorry,
Do you have any other social media that you'd like to tell people to maybe have a look at? No,
no,
Instagram.
that's all I do. I don't do YouTube. I'm in this just for my own memories, really. And like even on Kiwi Joe on the go Instagram, it might only be a 2 minute video, photos of the whole of Scotland, scooting around Scotland, or so I don't go big time, but I have brought myself a drone for this next journey.
Oh, yeah.
Just a little one. I haven't even test flown it yet. I'm going to do that when I'm going to chase the grandkids around a paddock next week with it to see how it goes. Hopefully, well, because I do know that Itchy Boots gets it through most countries. I haven't. I've got. I'm going to print off the rules for each country I'm going to.
Yeah.
It's under a certain weight one, so that I know
Yeah.
I'm in the legal side of it.
Sure.
Because I do love photography, and in the first journey, the first part when I was riding with my friend, I didn't use the camera as much, so I sent it back to New Zealand, and I so regretted it. So I got it back when I came back, and I just love walking around with it, seeing the people,
Oh, it's amazing, to be able to look at stuff and remember it is such an amazing thing. Because as much as you might think, oh, I remember that, then it's like, what? But to be able to look, and I do that all the time. And I'm not a photographer. Well, I am, but only, for me. I enjoy it. I'm not any good. But I do like to look and think, wow. I remember through my friends are always like take the piss and say, oh, God, it's David Attenborough again. Because I'm always, wherever I go, I'll stand there and do a video and say, wow, look at this. I can't believe, look at this. And they're all like, and they'll message me saying, oh my God, you're off again. You're embarrassing. And I'm like, whatever. I don't care.
I'm not really in for top boxes. Like don't have them on my bikes in New Zealand, but I put a top box on my bike for traveling to collect the stickers. And I always said that that's going to be a I'm going to make that, put legs on it, and make a bedside cabinet for my old folks' time, my when I'm in a home or something. That's going to be my bedside cabinet. And it's funny, on my Instagram post, it t can s sometimes take me longer to choose the music to go with the post than actually make the post, because that's the memory for me. So whenever I hear a song, it puts me back riding in Peru or riding in down some desert strait in Chile. That's that memory, and I love it.
I was just thinking that like, you love that. What do your family think? What do your kids and your grandkids think of mum and dad doing this stuff? What do
Oh,
they?
my son says, I'm proud to call you my mum, which is lovely. I think my kids, when I was in some of the dodgy countries like Guatemala and Honduras, I do have an e-perv on me, and I was setting it off with the trigger off for the email to my son,
Right.
so he could track me through, and then I would end it when I got there. But overall, I think if I'd listened to Google and taken note, I wouldn't have been in some of those areas, but those areas were fine.
Yeah.
So there was another one where I it was in, I think it was Honduras. I rode drove around the corner and there's a cone in the middle of the road, and I actually had it on video. Out walks this guy with the gun and everything on him, and I went, oh God, here goes. You know, they're gonna. I'll give them that money in my little purse.
The special
one I got. The only one I got. And he stopped me, and then out comes another one. I went, oh, it's two for one here now. And there's no other traffic around. And he stops me, makes me turn my bike off. And he just says to me, stop, cartel funeral, stop. And I was like I had butterflies up to here. If I opened my mouth, they were all going to come out. You know, I was that freaked.
Yeah.
It was fine. So I sat there smiling, and then a couple of minutes later, another vehicle. You know, there was vehicles on the road.
Yeah.
Like, I don't isolate myself in those sort of. And there were some young guys on scooters, and I was wary of them too. They sort of circle around you, and they're laughing, and you all think it's great to begin with, but then you think, oh, are they leading me around the road? And then there's going to be a ute in the middle of the road, and you know, I'm going to lose every electronic piece I have. But no, they were fine. They're just kids.
That's it. And they are in most places, you know. You just have to, again, just have the awareness of what if. But yeah, exactly. But then have your inbuilt, we've all got that radar, haven't we? We know when something feels a bit. And as long as you're starting to think, and then you think, you know what? The more you ride, the more places you go, the more you realise, like we mentioned earlier, most people
And other bikers, we are bikers, you know. You have that camaraderie, that companionship that you see on the road. You know, if you're stopped, and I've stopped, a guy in front of me, it was in Argentina, he was on a sports bike, and he passed me. And just as he passed me, he went into a pothole and his chain flew off. I was worried it was going to get tracked because it didn't like break and fall off. It was loose. And he cruised in and I followed him behind him. And he said, I was an angel that fell from heaven. Because I said, oh, it's all good. I've got the tools. I know how to do it, you know. And he had an idea. But he'd ridden for, I can't remember where from, with this majorly loose chain. I was really concerned for him. Mm. And I left after fixing it. I left and then he had a smoke. And then he overtook me again. And I actually pulled him over again. And he goes, oh, what's wrong? And I said, I'm just concerned because we have tightened your chain that far back past its last marker. I'm just concerned for the stability of where your wheels are and everything. You know, please go and get a link or go and buy a new chain. You know, he was a lovely guy.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, a bit more maintenance, my friend.
Is that something that you picked up as you were just interested in, talked about maintenance? Or did you specifically get that from the classes that you took? Did that include maintenance?
Maintenance comes into some of the classes, definitely, on how to work, you know, your chain and that. And but also just riding with friends.
Yeah.
My great friends that I'm so thankful for that guided me through the first stages of learning.
Yeah.
I do on the KDM, it's not tubeless tires, so I've got tubes in. So I'm actually going to, before I leave, see if I can find someone that will just guide me through. Like, I can change a tire on a, you know, like if there's two of you, it's always easy. You know, I feel you talk it through, but when you're stuck on your own, just the strength of levering off the tire and putting the new tube in. But, you know, we can all watch YouTube and I've watched people do it, but I actually want to do it.
Yeah.
Touch wood. So far throughout all my, I have not had one flat tire.
Oh, wow. That is interesting. That's very good. One.
But then I think that is too something. I do my maintenance before it's needed. So my tires are never down because I think the rule that what people say is you get flat tires in the last 10 or 20% of your tread. So I change my tires ahead of time, chain sprockets.
Yeah.
The KDM I've threaded through a spare clutch cable just in case. That was someone suggested. So
interesting.
I'm sure I'll bluff it. I've changed mountain bike tires, I've road cycle tires.
Yeah.
Can't be much difference.
I picked up my maintenance, and I'm no expert, I'm not a mechanic by any means, but you know, because my dad was into bikes and cars, and as he thanks dad, as he was doing stuff. He always involved me right from a very early age. He'd say, come and watch this, come and hold this, come and do this.
My dad was the same. My
Was
dad was the
it?
same. He taught us how to bring a chainsaw, weld, do all sorts. Because he taught us the basics of good basics of life, how to work.
Definitely. And I think that's how I am able to do some of the things now. Try and get my kids to do the same, come and watch me. Dad, I've got a puncher. Right. Come and watch me do it then. Don't sit in the car with the radio on your cheeky bugger while I do it in the rain. You know what I mean? Come and watch me. Because next time it's going to be you. So there's a bit about that, and I think you mentioned about you want to do it rather than just watch it. My dad always said that it's three things. One, watch, next, help, and next, do it yourself. If
Do
you
it
can do
yourself,
those three things, you'll be all right.
But that's like popping the tire, like you can use the stand on your motorbike and all things like that. I've seen that done, and that's great. But that's there again, that's an easier thing to do if there's two of yous. And the KDM doesn't have a center stand, which is okay. So there's little things, but I've got heavy duty tubes in there. And a few spare things, knowing, and I'll only use my spare fork seals and filters and stuff if the shop I go to doesn't have them. They're not getting them off me.
Good idea. That's really good advice, that. If you can get it done
You
where you
can get
can
it
get it done,
done,
do it.
keep the
Keep
spares.
yours for when you're somewhere where they can't. Yeah, definitely. You
So
know, I didn't interview Sam Manycom yet, but he speaks very much about the importance of planned preventative maintenance. And it's interesting when he said that, I said, yeah, absolutely, I'm the same. I don't know. You just said the same. How many people would save a breakdown by checking that a nut's tight, checking the chain's got the right tension, checking
You
the air
need
pressure?
to go over your bike regularly. It's because there is a book called The Biker Maintenance or The Maintenance or something. It's actually, I bought it and never read it, loaned it to a friend. She reckons it's really great, but I don't know what happened to it. But it's about two old guys. And they, the bike maintenance or something. It's about two old guys, and one does lots of maintenance and the other doesn't. And it's their journey together through life and motorbiking. And they reckon it's a really good book. And another, to talk about inspiration, Elstruth Baird. She inspired me.
I've got her book, right? I've got every book on motorcycling.
And I actually cried. I met her at the ABR. She signed my t-shirt. I take my hat off to that lady. Like, she done it. Like, it's easy peasy for us nowadays with the Google and everything that goes on. Absolutely. She did that. Hardly any maps. Back in the day. So
Like
yeah,
10 seconds.
I think they're actually going to do a movie on her.
Are they? That'd be interesting.
And she said that at the ABR festival.
You know, when I first mentioned about wanting more people on the podcast that's not just your average guy that always contacted by hundreds of guys. I'm so grateful that you spoke to Dave and that you did come and speak to us, because there'll be lots of women that choose not to do it because they can't somehow get that inspiration or that, validation that you can do it. It's okay, you can do it.
You can do it,
And speaking to you just shows you can do it. You can do it. And it doesn't have to be.
Just believe in yourself. Believe in yourself and do your research, but don't trust Google too much on don't go there, don't go there. It's a zone this and zone that. Well, I was the type of person that would go, well, because they've told me that, being non-compliant slightly, I'm going to go there and have a look. I'm going. It's like when I went into Ukraine, a lot of people go, oh, what are you doing that for? It's like, well, why not? I'll see. I'm not going to go where there's war is. I'm not, No.
I think what's important is people are inspired by you, but people who would initially discount the possibility of doing it, maybe because they're still working, maybe because they've got I don't know, a cocker spaniel at home, maybe, you know, whatever these ties are, pulls rather than the push, they decide they can't. They might not immediately be able to do everything you're doing. That doesn't mean they can't do, for example, a 14-day Vietnam ride or the scooter.
Oh, absolutely. You don't, yeah. You don't have to aim high and do hugely. Start off small. I started off small, and as I say, I thank my friends and you know, you most people need someone to help them start off to trigger their you know, the journeys. And then you grow, you learn. Yeah. But yeah, if your dog dies, just don't replace it if that's your plan.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, because they do tie you back, thing pets. Like you talked about your cat. You know, it's a thing that holds you somewhere.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you know, I'm not suggesting, you know, people start giving the dogs and cats away. But, you know, definitely if you find that you've got the freedom, you've got no ties, sometimes that might be the opportunity to make a change and do something. So as big or as small as it is, you've been a massive inspiration to lots
awesome.
Of people, I'm sure you have. So, Kiwi Joe, we're going to put this at a two-hour point, which is the organic point at which these often end.
Yep, that's enough.
Get out. So,
get out.
So awesome. I'm really, really grateful, and it's great to meet you. And when you come over to the UK, come and say hello. You know, if you're
yes, I will. Yeah,
you're probably going to ride past here on the way up to wherever you're going. So
you want to have another yarn at any point on my travels? Yeah, I'd say it will take me. Yeah, I'll be on the road. So
yeah, definitely. And do that. Contact me if there's anything that you know you think, oh, I'm sure that people would love to hear about that. Because believe me, even if you don't initially think, to me, it's just like, oh, you know, one of them things. To a lot of people sat at home, it's amazing, honestly.
Yeah.
So has this been. So thank you.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Thank you.
Very welcome. So everybody, thanks for listening. Please consider subscribing to the YouTube channel or to one of the podcast channels if you're more interested in listening while you're driving. I know a lot of people do that, but it does help. This is not a monetized channel. So just like Joe, I am doing this because I love it. I'm doing this because I like talking to people who love motorcycles and love motorcycling and adventuring. And whatever they do, I'm interested in because I know you will be. So it's not about money, but it can be a bit disheartening if 11 people watch something when you've put so much effort into it. So please subscribe. And I've got quite a few subscribers now, several, a couple, over, I think, 1,600 subscribers, which is great. But please subscribe and watch and like and comment if you like. Anything you need to know or you'd like to know, just ask. And either, I'm sure Jo will watch it. She'll be able to make a reply on there, or I can reply if it's something that I can help with. Any help or advice you need or any further inspiration, just ask. So thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you next time. Thanks, Jo. All the best.
Welcome.
Bye-bye.